He was suddenly aware of how huge the force flowing around him, and probably right through him, like X-rays, must be, and had to control an urge to step away, either to the right or left. "Say, Roland, this won't make me sterile, will it?" Roland shrugged, smiling faintly. "It's like a riverbed," Susanna marveled. "A riverbed so overgrown you can barely see it, but it's still there. The pattern of shadows will never change as long as we stay inside the path of the beam, will it?" "No," Roland said. "They'll change direction as the sun moves across the sky, of course, but we'll always be able to see the course of the beam. You must remember that it has been flowing along this same path for thousands, perhaps tens of thousands of years. Look up, you two, into the sky." They did, and saw that the thin cirrus clouds had also picked up that herringbone pattern along the course of the beam, and those clouds within the alley of its power were flowing faster than those to either side. They were being pushed southeast, being pushed in the direction of the Dark Tower. "You see, even the clouds must obey." A small flock of birds coursed toward them. As they reached the path of the beam, they were all deflected toward the southeast for a moment. Although Eddie clearly saw this happen, his eyes could hardly credit it. When the birds had crossed the narrow corridor of the beam's influence, they resumed their former course. "Well," Eddie said, "I suppose we ought to get going. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step and all that shit." "Wait a minute." Susanna was looking at Roland. "It isn't just 1,000 miles, is it?" "Not anymore." "How far are we talking about, Roland? 5,000 miles? 10?
"I can't say. It will be very far."
"Well, how in the hell are we ever gonna get there with you two pushing me in this goddamn wheelchair? We'll be lucky to make 3 miles a day through yonder drawers, and you know it."
"The way has been opened," Roland said patiently. "And that's enough for now. The time may come, Susanna Dean, when we travel faster than you would like."
"Oh, yeah?"
She looked at him truculently, and both men could see Detta Walker dancing a dangerous hornpipe in her eyes again.
"You got a race car lined up? If you do, it might be nice if we had a damn road to run it on."
"The land and the way we travel on it will change. It always does." Susanna flapped a hand at the gunslinger. "Go on with you," it said.
"You sound like my old mama saying God will provide."
"Hasn't he?" Roland asked gravely. She looked at him for a moment in silent surprise, then threw her head back and laughed at the sky.
"Well, I guess that depends on how you look at it. All I can say is that if this is providing, Roland, I'd hate to see what'd happen if he decided to let us go hungry."
"Come on, let's do it," Eddie said. "I want to get out of this place. I don't like it."
And that was true, but that wasn't all. He also felt a deep eagerness to set his feet upon that concealed path, that highway in hiding. Every step was a step closer to the field of roses and the tower which dominated it. He realized, not without some wonder, that he meant to see that tower or die trying.
"Congratulations, Roland," he thought. "You've done it. I'm one of the converted. Someone say hallelujah." "There's one other thing before we go." Roland bent and untied the rawhide lace around his left thigh. Then he slowly began to unbuckle his gun belt.
"What's this jive?" Eddie asked.
Roland pulled the gun belt free and held it out to him. "You know why I'm doing this," he said calmly.
"Put it back on, man."
Eddie felt a terrible stew of conflicting emotions roiling inside him, could feel his fingers trembling even inside his clenched fists.
"What do you think you're doing?"
"Losing my mind, an inch at a time. Until the wound inside me closes, if it ever does. I am not fit to wear this, and you know it."
"Take it, Eddie," Susanna said quietly. "If you hadn't been wearing this goddamn thing last night when that bat came at me, I'd be gone from the nose up this morning."
The gunslinger replied by continuing to hold his remaining gun out to Eddie. The posture of his body said he was prepared to stand that way all day if that was what it took.
"All right," Eddie cried. "God damn it, all right."
He snatched the gun belt from Roland's hand and buckled it about his own waist in a series of rough gestures. He should have been relieved, he supposed, hadn't he looked at this gun, lying so close to Roland's hand in the middle of the night, and thought about what might happen if Roland really did go over the high side? Hadn't he and Susanna both thought about it? But there was no relief, only fear and guilt, and a strange, aching sadness far too deep for tears. He looked so strange without his guns, so wrong. Okay, now that the numbfuck apprentices have the guns and the master's unarmed, can we please go? If something big comes out of the bush at us, Roland, you can always throw your knife at it. Oh, that, he murmured, I almost forgot. He took the knife from his purse and held it out hilt first to Eddie. This is ridiculous, Eddie shouted. Life is ridiculous. Yeah, put it on a postcard and send it to the fucking Reader's Digest. Eddie jammed the knife into his belt and then looked defiantly at Roland. Now can we go? There is one more thing, Roland said. Weepin' creepin' Jesus. The smile touched Roland's mouth again. Just joking, he said. Eddie's mouth dropped open. Beside him, Susanna began to laugh again. The sound rose, as musical as bells in the morning stillness.